This episode of True North Country Comics is brought to you by You Are My Christmas, a brand new song from Canadian songstress Stephanie Beaumont. Whether it's decorating the tree and wrapping the presents, baking up a storm, or welcoming friends and family from near and far, Stephanie Beaumont captures the spirit of Christmas in her new song, You Are My Christmas. With this song, you're invited to share Stephanie's Christmas wish, that everyone has someone who's their Christmas too. You Are My Christmas is now available on iTunes, Google Play Music, Spotify, Deezer, and wherever good music is sold. Get yours today. Welcome to another edition of the True North Country Comics Podcast, dedicated to promote Canadian comic book creators and supporters. It's December 21st, 2018. I'm John Swinimer. On this episode, I chat with Hervé St. Louis. Hervé is a researcher of usable security, but he's also the founder of Comic Book Bin, and he's a creator of Johnny Bullet. During our chat, Hervé talked about his background in usable security, his comic book Johnny Bullet, his appreciation for actor Steve McQueen, and his love of fine sports cars. Before I go further, here's some of the current news about Canadian comic book creators and supporters. Tor.com published their list of the best comic books of 2018. Martian Manhunter, with art by Riley Rossmo. Nancy Drew, with art by Jen St. Ange. You can read more at Tor.com. Pace magazine published their list of the best horror comic books of 2018. The list included, at number 12, Speak, the graphic novel with art by Emily Carroll. Number 5, Come Into Me, written by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler. And number 3, Gideon Falls, written by Jeff Lemire. You can read more at pacemagazine.com. And not to be outdone, Pace magazine published their list of the 15 best sci-fi and fantasy comic books of 2018. At number 3, the list includes Saga, with art by Fiona Staples. You can read more at pacemagazine.com. The Boston Globe published their list of the best graphic novels of 2018. Among the many is Dirty Plot, the complete Julie Doucette by Julie Doucette, along with The New World, Comics of Marantania, selected and designed by Seth. You can read more at bostonglobe.com. And Multiversity Comics came up with their list of the best writers of 2018. Topping the list is Jeff Lemire. The site wrote, "If you love superheroes, read Lemire. If you love slice-of-life stories, read Lemire. If you just love good stories, read Lemire. Just read Jeff Lemire." And you can read more at multiversitycomics.com. And now, here's my chat with Hervé St. Louis.
I want to talk a little bit about, first of all, your academic career. You are a university instructor.
Yes, now I am. I guess in a few weeks, I'll be taking a tenure track job at a university, at a Canadian university. So that's going to change pretty soon. So I guess that's an exclusive something.
And your studies, when you're doing the academic studies, it's on usable security, from what I understand. Can you talk a little bit about what is that?
Yeah, usable security is part of what we call human-computer interaction. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I'm afraid not. You have to explain that to me.
Human-computer interaction is, you are the listeners might know this more as usability and user experience. When you study things like technology and figure out how to make it more convenient for people to use and so on. So we're the people who are focused on studying how people use technology on a daily basis, which is why we call it human-computer interaction. But usability and user experience are part of what we do. We do more, a lot more things like artificial intelligence and a lot of other things of evaluations, but also on the creation side, on creating better interface. And usable security is the part where information security meets human-computer interaction. So there's always a conflict in terms of, do we make these things more usable for people, or do we make them more safe and secure? So it's almost like if you imagine you're in bed, a couple putting the blanket on their side. This is what usable security is about, figuring out how to pull the blanket so that everybody gets coverage.
So it's got nothing to do with autocorrect on my iPhone or anything like that?
Yes, it does.
Oh, I
Oh,
was
yeah.
joking. Oh, okay.
No, it does. Some people might study that. There might be something that someone might focus on, how to make sure that the when you use the when you have the fat finger problem, as we call it, how to make sure that the interface that the keypad on your phone is better designed so to limit the amount of fat finger error. So it, yeah, that is completely within what we would look at.
Interesting.
Some people would do that, yeah.
In my interviews with a lot of the artists these days, they've actually moved from traditional to the digital method of creating comic books, and I see now that more interacting with the technology, I guess your studies can help people interact better with these type of devices when they're creating them.
Definitely. What's interesting in my case, in terms of my background, is I started on the production side of what we call multimedia and animation, in a sense. But what's more interesting to me nowadays, I mean, having all of this background from way back, is how do you make all those technologies, including those that we use in artistic productions, how do we make all those technologies more responsive to people who use them? Since we stopped using, many of us don't draw with pencils or pens anymore. How do you make that technology as transparent as possible, as seamless as possible, to make sure that there's no barrier between the user, the person who's using this, and the technology, so they can get to doing what they really want to do, as opposed to, oh, okay, yes, I can't do this with this thing, I can't do that. Oh, yes, I need to remember there's this limit here, and so on, this constraint. So we work with that. This is actually what human-computer interaction is about. We study how to remove all those barriers that stop people from doing what they want to do. So in a sense, I haven't done any work in that area yet, but that's the kind of work I could be doing in the future, definitely. It would be definitely the kind of things I would be focused on if I have time. But for now, I'm more on the security side of that problem.
Right. Well, that's a good segue, I guess, into the comic book realm that you do. So, how do you go from that very specific studies of human-computer interaction to making comic books?
Well, for me, when I saw human-computer interaction in terms of at the university level came to me when I was back in industry, when I started making apps, mobile apps, and so on. So my mobile app work was based on me being a storyboard artist and animator. I had to tell stories. I had to figure out visualize stories. Instead of having characters, I had screens. I had to tell a story with a screen. All people are going to be using this technology, and so on. I had to figure that out in advance. So this is where animation and comics came into the kind of work that I do today, and I still use those skills, which actually makes me a bit unique in that sense. Well, a few people are discovering that, oh yes, storyboard actually makes sense in human-computer interaction. Yeah, we should all be using this. And you'll see people write big books about it, and it's so funny. And I'm like, ah, animators and cartoonists have been doing this forever.
Since the dawn of time, when we wrote
Exactly.
on cave walls and that sort of thing, yes.
Exactly. We figured out that we could explain stuff to people, including technology, from way back. And now, oh, now like other academics are, oh yeah, this comic book stuff, like this storyboard stuff, that's good stuff. Right? So this is, and I've been one of those guys saying, no, technology. It's actually limited technology in the sense that storyboards, we only need a pencil or paper to visualize whatever we want to do. So it is something that I still use today. And the reason I'm doing this kind of work is because of comics and animation. So sometimes it's a bit difficult for people to understand where I came from. But if you look overall at the work that I do, and I still use those approaches and techniques even in my research today. They're used all the time. I'm that kind of scholar in the sense that, and if you look at my online profile, like the LinkedIn and so on, or the Twitter account, you'll see I never am shy about saying cartoonist and researcher. Never. It's never hidden. Anyone who has to deal with me knows, like at the University of Toronto where I was, my entire faculty, they all knew. Everybody knew I was, yeah, he's a cartoonist. Who also does research, and they accepted that.
That's great. That's something to be proud
They.
of, that's for sure. So speaking of comic books, you've created a character called Johnny Bullet. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that character and the comic book.
Yeah, Johnny Bullet, I guess I'm not even sure if it's a generational thing. I guess like many little boys, I discovered him late. I discovered Steve McQueen pretty late. And man, he's so cool.
Ah, yeah, he's a cool character, that's for sure.
He's cool. So Johnny Bullet was like, that was in the summer of 2014. I mean, I've been working on Comic Book Bin, which is a comic book news site for years. I mean, since 2002. And I wanted, finally, I said, okay, I need to step into the comic. Also, I needed the comic to figure out, to help me balance the doctoral research I was doing also. I needed something, some kind of outlet where I had to do something else. I had nothing to do with the academic work that I was doing. And I said, okay, well, I sent out an email to the estate managing the Steve McQueen name and so on, saying, I'd like to do a comic on Steve McQueen about him driving cars, fast cars in the 70s and so on. And they never responded. My plan B was, well, if they don't ever respond, or if they say no, ask me too much money for it, I'll just create this thing, this guy called Johnny Bullet. And after 2 weeks, I mean, I didn't wait too long. And after 2 weeks, they never responded. So I said, okay, I'll just create Johnny Bullet. I'll just run with that instead. That was the best decision. So although if you look at the first few strips in the web comic, you'll see the first few ones, he wasn't exactly all defined. He was mostly a cipher for Steve McQueen. Pretty quickly, he just became his own character, and he drives cars, does stunts. Women, well, I call them evil women and evil men. Everybody chases him,
Right.
and it's all about the cars, the pony cars, the muscle cars. It's basically, for me, it's just fun. It's just pure fun.
Sure. Now your artist renditions of cars are really accurate. How did you do you have models or how do you work that
I
out?
do have models. I don't use 3D models. I actually use, I buy the cars. Yes.
Not full size, I hope.
No, I'm not that
Well,
rich.
okay. I imagine you must have a big garage to get all those cars, but that's a really fantastic recreation of those, that's for sure.
It helps a lot. I think I figure out pretty quickly. I guess one of the attractions would be the cars. So I said, okay, let's. And in a sense, a friend of mine, I said that the way I use the, well, there's such a thing as, I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, there's a, such an expression called car porn.
Oh, yes, I have. Yes.
Okay. Basically, Johnny Bullet is almost car porn. And a friend of mine, I said, you always squeeze a car. Like it's outrageous the way you try to squeeze cars in that, no strips. You put cars wherever you can.
That's it. That's eye candy, that's for sure. That's for sure. So the unique thing about your comic book, however, is not just the fact of the subject matter, but also the fact that it's bilingual. You make it in English and French. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how that came to be.
Well, I'm a Francophone. I'm from Quebec, originally from way back. I mean, I've moved to first Alberta and then Toronto over a decade ago. So when I think about Johnny Bullet itself, the strips, everything, the script, I don't know in what la I don't even I'm not conscious of in what language I'm creating it. So it's just created. And then I just need to translate it or make sense of it in the other language, whichever that will be. If you read the scripts, the original scripts, it's a mix and match of English and French all over the place. And so also I want to reach out for as many people as possible. So it is something that from the get-go, Johnny Bullet was created in both languages from the get-go. And I do say, even though technically Johnny Bullet is set in an English-speaking environment mostly, but I do say that each version of the strips are equally authoritative. They're not translations. They definitely are not translations of one another. Some of the terms may change, although even in the strips themselves. For example, in terms of auto racing, there are more words in French in auto racing than in English. They have more specific words that the English language just doesn't have those terms. And so I will use those terms. And there's things that are make more sense in both languages, like in one language or the other. And I'll just go for that. So if you do read the two versions, you'll get, I guess, an even more comprehensive overview of what was going on. But either version should be fine. But because it's also a webcomic, they're published at exactly at the same time. Minutes apart, obviously. But they're published minutes apart and they're prepared at the same time. So it's always been something for me to do. Call it the typical Canadian, the most Canadian thing to do, to make a comic that is equally in both languages. And one thing I've been thinking about for several years, for the first edition that I'd like to print, now that I'm done with the first big chunk of, 8 chapters, 185 or 86 strips in all, which is ready for publication. I just need to color everything. But there is a word, there's no trans. I mean, the word that is used in English is also the French word. It's called a tête bêche. It means when and any viewer here who's Canadian will know about this, when they get a document from the federal government and they just flip it upside down and it flips into French or English. This is the way I'd like to publish the first edition of Johnny Bullet, as a book, basically both versions in one book. Yeah.
That could be cool. There you go.
I've never seen it before in comics. I know it's been done in novels, but it's usually like for example, like the perspective of the wife, the perspective of the husband. That has been done before.
Right.
But to do it in terms of something like the same comic, but same pages, same content, but different language, which means there would be no back cover. In a sense, for me, it would make it easier to release the first version. Like, I'm not opposed to future edition being like language specific, but if I'm going to kickstart like the first volume of the thing, I think I'm hoping that readers will not say, I just want one version of this, not the two of them, because for me the reality of this comic is that it's been built in those two languages at once.
Right.
Like, it's not like one or the other. It's not like I commissioned someone to do the translation. No, they're done by the same person. They're created at the exact same time. The dialogue, don't ask me which one came first. Some strip, part of it might start in English, start in French another time. There's no sense. There's no, like, I didn't even keep track of this, right? It's a big mess in terms of the creation of the language part is a big mess. I don't know which one started first. I don't know.
Right.
And every single strip is different, so I don't know at this point. There's too many of them for me to even recall. So I'm hoping that it's something that people may find of interest to them, the creative process. Now, I don't know if I don't know. It's up to people to let me know.
Right. Now, you mentioned Kickstarter. That was going to be my next question. What are your plans for Johnny Bullet and getting it out into the public? What's the next step?
Well, now that I've done the first 8 chapters of the story, which is available as a webcomic, that's always been my plan. The strategy I've always had for myself is if you're going to make a webcomic, because of the work I do believe in that webcomics and the digital comics have a place in what we do. I believe that that's something important. But at the same time, I also understand that you can't give everything away. So, well, the entire comic is there right now, but it's in black and white. Mm-hmm. So I said to myself, from the get-go, that was always the plan. The color version will be for print only. Now, if that's a way of doing the value-added version of a book, so anyone can read it, but it's in black and white. But if you really want to read it in color, you should buy the book, and which I'm going to kickstart one day. I started coloring it, but obviously I'm busy with the university and,
right, yes,
and research and teaching all the time. So that's that gets in the way. I'm not in a hurry to get it out as quickly as possible. I would like to, I'd really like to be able to release it at something like TCAF one day.
Mm-hmm, sure.
because I think that's a great venue for such a thing. I think TCAF is just perfect for this kind of thing.
Right.
Or even the equivalent in Vancouver and so on. But for now, I'm trying to work at it as quickly as I can. It's not going as fast as making the... I think I was a little bit more disciplined in releasing the pages week after week, because I was, on average, I would do about a page a week.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's rather the PhD. So that was actually my outlet to release all the pressure of doing a PhD, which is extremely stressful. And I will say Johnny Bullet is basically the second PhD I did, because the story, the first eight chapters, ended like in September. I finished my PhD in December and like graduated officially in June. So you can see like it, they're very much aligned together.
Right.
Now I just need to do the coloring part, and then I'll kickstart it and release it as a book somehow. I'd like to make it, because it's I use a landscape format as opposed to the portrait, because it is a comic strip. That might make it even more difficult, but then everything about this, about Johnny Bullet, has always been non-standard. A comic strip as a web comic, there's not many of them, even though I think the format is perfect for that.
Right.
And then something about the 1970s, a car race in the 1970s. I'm not even doing a superhero, for God's sake.
Right? But it's very cool subject matter, that's for sure.
But what I've realized is that I don't think it's as popular as a web comic. I think as a book, it might be more popular. Mm-hmm. That the audience who might be interested in that, the natural audience for this, is probably not reading web comics.
That could be true. Yeah, you never know.
If that makes any sense, like, I have a feeling that I haven't reached out to the right audience yet. It's there, but I don't think the people who might be, I don't think they're reading web comics right now.
No, it'll be interesting to see who connects with it, because I think it's a very fascinating subject matter and great opportunity for you. So that being said, where can people find you and Johnny Bullet online?
They can find it at comicbookbin.com/bullet. So I'll repeat that, comicbookbin.com/bullet. And the digital version, so I have started cleaning up some of the old art and so on, and they can also buy the digital comic if they want, which is usually relettered and everything. I go back to the older page also all the time and fix them up. The ones on the website will stay, like the web comic will stay as is, because if you read it from the beginning to now, you'll see, well, that's 4 years of me drawing nonstop. And so there is a natural evolution of the drawing. Johnny Bullet changes a lot. In those pages, all the characters change. Everything for people who are interested in, studying the progress of a creator, even the story, everything, it becomes a bit more tighter as the story goes by. So at first, also when I created it, how could I say this nicely? I'm not a fan of world building. Yes, I know, this is sacrilege in 2018. I am not a world builder. Well, I had no world to build either for that. I mean, everything already exists. The 1970s in the United States, that already exists. So I just started the comic like that without thinking much, much ahead. I mean, I had a basic story. Okay, there was a crime. Crime happened. He's going to investigate. Stuff will happen. Cars, women, bad guys.
Right.
But no exact set plan of how to set everything in motion. Well, I mean, beside the original crime that happened. So no world building. So it's only later that all the layers and so on came in the comic, and everything got tighter, starting with the first, but everything builds up on those first pages. So there's a lot of, in terms of a lot of evolution. I mean, I had done a lot of comics way, way back and more animation, but how could I say, there's like a, it's like me being a bit more mature, making a comic
sure
right now. So it's a bit different. It's a different type of discourse that I have with the reader. The subject matter also is nothing I had ever done before. So it was a lot of experiment, which was fun to do. And Someone asked me once, a friend asked me, "You like comics? What superhero would you like to be?" So years ago, I would have said, "Yeah, this character, that character, and so on." And I said, "Ah, you know what? I'm already writing the stories about the character I really like. I don't think any other superhero would do it for me at this point. He's not a superhero. He's a regular dude." So this is how much of an influence he's been on me in the last few years, that I really like telling the stories of just a guy who drives cars. It's also set, because it's set in the 1970s, there's so many challenges in terms of the design. A lot of time is spent researching every single object, spoons, chairs, tables, you name it. Even the socks he wears sometimes. Oh, socks from the 70s had a distinct look.
Yes, it did, that's for sure. Well, I'm sure it's going to be something that people can definitely look forward to.
Well, I've done the first 8 chapters. I thought I was going to work on something else, but I think I may go back and do maybe 8 more chapters. It's a kind of comic I've realized, a bit like Charles Schulz. I think I'd like to go back to it and draw it forever. It's weird to say. I don't know why. And I know it's such a different type of comic. And I will say this to readers. It's a comic strip. So it's an adventure comic strip. It really feels like those old comic strips that from the newspapers. That's basically what I guess I'm trying to do. My style, the way I tell this, it just goes like that. I don't even try very hard. I guess that's how my stories feel like. So I would like to tell potential readers to give it a try. Everything is online, so you can start from the first strip and read it to the last story and just immerse yourself in it. Do pay attention that sometimes there's a lot, like there's a whole chapter that is completely silent, that there's no words in there. Pay attention to the drawings. There's a lot of what I call storytelling told, a lot of stories being told when there's only one word sometimes in the page, but there's a lot of other stuff happening in those pages. And for me, it was an opportunity to discover comics. I don't feel that people are making these kind of comics anymore. I feel like writers today are overwriting their comics, which is, again, maybe why I don't like world building also. Like, there's too much time spent on telling people what they need to understand as opposed to just drawing it and letting them figure it out. So there's a lot of Johnny Bullitt goes back to the other extreme, like sometimes one word for the entire page or the whole chapter. Chapter number 7 was completely wordless, not a single word. And that was it was a bit more difficult to get the story across, but it was a lot of fun. I would tell the potential reader, just stop and read that chapter. There's so much stuff happening in there. And it might blow you away, or it might bore you, I don't know.
Well, hopefully, I'm sure they'll be fascinated, that's for sure.
Hopefully so, people will find it interesting, yeah.
Thanks to Hervé for the chat. You can find Hervé on Twitter at ToonDoctor and online at ToonDoctor.com. And thanks to you for listening to the True North Country Comics podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to and like this podcast on iTunes. And please leave a good rating. Also, check out the TrueNorthCountryComics.com website. I encourage you to follow along on Twitter at True North Comics and on Elo at elo.co/TrueNorthCountryComics. Hopefully you'll find something new about Canadian comic book creators and supporters. And please send your feedback to info@TrueNorthCountryComics.com. Thanks again for listening. Come back soon for another episode. Bye for now. True North Country Comics Podcast is copyright True North Country Comics, copyright 2018.